Hello, I'm Robert Manning from a small town called Essa, Ontario, just north of Toronto, up in Canada, and I'm in Leadville, almost halfway up the Continental Divide Trail on the way back home.
Now tell me a bit more about this trail. How long is it, and from where to where does it go?
The official trail is 3,100 miles, and it starts at a monument called Crazy Cook at the Mexican border with New Mexico down in the Boot Heel, and it follows the, well, generally follows the Continental Divide up through New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, splits between Montana and Idaho a little bit, and then ends in Glacier National Park up in Canada, at the Canadian border actually, so not quite into Canada.
And how far through are you now?
1,300 miles ish, approximately, but I go by trail miles, even though I don't always follow the trail, because there's a bunch of interesting things on either side. And the idea behind the trail, even though it's clearly delineated, is that it's a corridor approach, and as long as you're within, say, 50 miles either side, then you can get away with saying that you hike the Continental Divide Trail. So I'm often off of it. A, avoiding snow, and B, looking for little interesting bits I find on the map that are not anywhere near snow.
And how did this idea come about to do this?
I used to work all summer. I was a forest firefighter up in Canada, in Ontario, for 17 years. And I don't know if jealous is the right word, but everybody else's summer adventures kind of got me thinking about what other things I could be doing. And then when I finished forest firefighting, I bought a piece of land, planted an orchard, and now the trees are sitting there growing, and I had the opportunity, so I figured spend the summer out in the mountains trotting around. And I found this trail, and it seemed perfect. And now that I'm on it, it's a bit much, but it's still fun. So it's a real challenge, but so far I've been up to it, which is good.
And what was the most memorable part of the trail so far?
There's a few, and they tend to be the most terrifying. So there was one in New Mexico where I got chased off a ridge down into a canyon by a thunderstorm, and I either had to climb back up a cliff or across this crazy flooded river. And I crossed the river. I have no idea how I made it, because it was just charging down over boulders, and it was, in retrospect, it was a pretty dumb move even trying, but somehow I got across. And actually, a few days ago, there was crossing a pass called the Ann Pass, which had a giant cornice of snow just hanging over the side we were coming down, or I was coming down. And normal me would have just turned around and left, but I don't know why. But I climbed down the cornice, and maybe 100 meters of sheer snow just kicking a ladder for my hands and feet, and got to the bottom and looked up and wondered how and why I did it. So it's the, there's a lot of when you sit there and you realize where you are, like you just kind of have that moment of, I don't know what it is, not quite in a strong enough to be an epiphany, but you're sitting on a rock on a ridge top and looking back over this huge vista and realizing that you just walked across the whole thing and how kind of grandiose it is. But the main memory stickers are the terrifying moments that you just somehow managed to get through.
And I mean, if you're, for example, crossing a river and you're completely wet then, or you have to dig your way through really deep snow, how do you warm up?
Surprisingly, the sun, even at altitude, is really warm. So just getting out of the wind, usually if you hide behind a boulder in the sunshine, you can warm up. But also just hiking with the pack on gets you going pretty quickly. And if you can't manage that, then you just layer up with like the wool and the down jacket. And I've never been to a point where I've had to stop and take out my tent and actually climb in my sleeping bag during the day, but I'm sure that's also an option. But really, unless you're in the river or in the snowbank, and the immediacy of the cold is there, but once you're out, you warm up pretty quick just with the actions in sunshine.
And what is your emergency plan, basically? Like, who would know where you are if something happens or so, you know? Because what you describe sounds pretty scary. Do you have, like, an emergency beacon or some kind of tracking system?
Other people are better prepared in that than I am. I have a lot of outdoors experience, which isn't enough. Mostly I'm just winging it. And some of the risks I'm taking are kind of silly just for that reason alone, is because nobody knows exactly where I am at any given time. I'm not carrying a emergency beacon thing to alert anyone. So really I'm off in the bushes by myself. And if I thought about it that way, I'd turn around a lot more often, but it's more of a in retrospect thinking. So far it's worked out, just using my, I would say better judgment, but we'll leave off better. Using my judgment and, like, also some of the skills learned doing other things, like forest firefighting, being out in the bush for weeks on end and strange places and orienteering. And I have a commercial pilot's license as well, so I use that for map reading and weather and mostly planning on keeping myself out of trouble instead of trying to get myself out of trouble. You know?
And how do you best do that?
So far, luck. And there's a saying actually in pilot school where if you're flying long enough, you hope that the glass full of luck doesn't run out before the glass full of skill fills up, you know? And it's kind of the, for me, it's been the same on the trail just because lack of experience in long distance hiking. So as the experience grows and I figure out what being on the trail's like, then I have to, or I rely on the luck that I've had so far less. And even the non-routine, like the kind of extravagant nature of the whole adventure sort of becomes routine. There's elements, you know, like the sun comes up in the morning, warms you up. By noon, the snow's a little soft, but it's warm. You get ready to camp before the sun goes down and the cold comes to get you, so there's a routine to it, even though every day is different.
And how many miles a day do you usually do, depending on the terrain, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it depends on a lot of terrain. Like, starting in New Mexico, I realized how out of shape I was, so the mileage was down. Even then, I was going about 20 or 25 miles a day. By mid-New Mexico, before I hit the mountains, I could do about 30 or 35 miles a day. And then coming into the mountains in the tougher terrain and the snow is a bit of a shock, because you're used to picking out a place on the map and getting there by nighttime. But the mountains in the snow, you're only getting halfway, and it's kind of annoying. But then you realize where you are and why, and the struggle, and you go to sleep just soaking wet. Well, all your stuff's wet, and there's nothing more glorious than crawling into your nice warm tent and sleeping bag after crawling through the snow all day. So some of the mileage in the mountains, the worst has been 9 miles, which was a huge struggle, and even that 9 miles was exhausting. But now that I'm getting better at picking routes and going around crap spots like snow and flooded rivers, I'm getting back up there, so I could probably reliably do 20 to 25 miles a day now. But it wouldn't all be on the trail. I'd just weaving and dodging.
And you just said climbing into your sleeping bag while all your stuff is wet. So when you wake up in the morning, that stuff is still going to be wet, right? So you've got to get back into those wet clothes?
It depends on your interpretation of wet, because it's frozen. So my shoes so far, actually my shoes have been pretty good, and they dry out. Well, I don't usually walk through rivers or anything late in the day, so they get kind of dry. And then overnight, they dry enough so that it's not soaking through your socks, you know. On really wet days, yeah, I've had one and it just wasn't fun. And you just put it on and bear it and get walking and dry out. So it's cold at nighttime, there's frost. I put on frozen shoes and frozen socks before, and it's unpleasant, but it's not as bad as it sounds. Even though it sounds pretty terrible, You just put it on, 10 minutes later, everything's fine.
And how often do you meet other people?
I meet other people often. There's only been a few days where I've been hiking entirely alone, which is a bit of a surprise because in all my research, the remoteness of the trail and the much fewer people that try it kind of put me in the mindset that I'd be hiking alone almost every day. And that hasn't been the case. And part of it is, the popularity of the trail is increasing almost exponentially. So a lot more people started this year. It also shares the trail with the Colorado Trail here in Colorado. So you have a lot of day hikers and section hikers. And there's a pulse. If you want to through hike, you have to start at a certain time between, say, early April and early May, or else you'll, if any earlier, and you'll hit snow in the San Juan Mountains in Colorado, and any later you'll hit too much snow up in northern Montana, up in Glacier Park. So you have to time it. A few people drop off early, and then if you made it through New Mexico, you're pretty sure health-wise that you can do the rest of the trail. So other than maybe financial obligations or family emergencies, you made it to a point where you probably should be able to make it the rest of the way, by now especially.
Well, it's a very strenuous thing nevertheless, and I'm assuming some of the camping and so on, you're still on your own. So what makes it worthwhile? Because you were, when I spoke to you earlier, you were talking about perhaps even adding another long trail after you arrive because you're faster than you thought you were. So what's the real draw for you?
I have no idea. There's no one thing. There's just, I really don't know. There's just getting up every day and picking a spot. It's a matter of scale, and there's a lot of different scales to use. So in the largest scale, every day you're getting slightly closer to the Canadian border, and it's a pretty, I don't know, what's the word, epic. Epic's a bit too strong. But the whole, to finish the Continental Divide Trail is a pretty big deal. So the closer you get, the kind of more excited you get to having that experience. All the way down to the scale of looking at your map and where you're going to have your next break and seeing if you can make it the 5 miles to the next water source or the bridge across the next river. And then, so you just have these small sections of every day that add up to every day, and then a few days in a row add up to a different section of trail, like between towns. So there's the 4 or 5 days between towns, and they add up to the 3 or 4 or 5 weeks within a state, and those add up to the entire trail. So you kind of keep your mind on the big picture, the middle picture, the small picture all at the same time, just to kind of reward yourself for getting to the next spot. Plus, on the way to the next spot, you're crossing all these little gems, you know. You'll cross a ridge and the view behind you will be spectacular, or you'll be going over a pass and all of a sudden these giant snow-capped peaks are all around you. Or more civilized, you'll walk into a town and there'll be a Chinese food store that's the best Chinese food you ever ate. You know, something like that. It's always different, but it's always something.
Is that the Chinese food you had here?
It was pretty good.
Thanks for that tip.
I'm not knocking them. It was good.
I just wonder, do you find that, you know, your mind changes? Do you find it just changes the way you look at things or the way your mind operates?
Yep. It does. It changes your mindset of what matters and what doesn't matter. And back when I was at home before I came out here, you know, there's little things like paying my property taxes or going grocery shopping or getting gas for the car, you know, all these things that at the time just added up like lint in a dryer. And just constant bother. And then you realize when you're out on the trail how much of that stuff doesn't matter. It's kind of analogous to packing. You know, at first you pack all this stuff, and then a month in you realize that 90% of it you don't need, and you just bring along what you do need. So the mindset is similar, and you just kind of realize what matters and doesn't really matter. And also, your mind just wanders and you think all these crazy thoughts as you're trucking through the bush, and you get the universe all figured out, and then the next day you forget what you thought. So it is pretty fun.
Do you write? Do you carry anything with you to write things down or to keep a diary?
I started to, but no. My documentation is just photos on my phone and some videos. And whenever I get to a town stop or somewhere with Wi-Fi, I write little notes on every day and send some pictures back home, or like Facebook, social media, so that people back home can see that I didn't die and that and see what I did. And it's kind of funny because I left the group thing open, so people have been fighting other people, and all of a sudden I got like 200 people figuring, like, commenting on what I did yesterday, which is bizarro because some of them I don't even know. It's just weird.
And how long did you prepare for this trip?
I could say probably 6 months, except that when I got on the trail, I realized that I wasn't prepared at all. So I was getting ready for about 6 months, and then most of the preparation and things directly involved in the trail have happened on the trail. So things like pack weights and bringing food, what to eat, how to resupply, mailing things to myself, getting rid of things. My poor sister up in Seattle is getting box after box of junk that I don't want anymore. So sorry, Sarah. But yeah, most of the learning experience has been actually on the trail.
So if we go back to the preparation, so once you decided you were going to do this trail, what goes into actually preparing? You already mentioned you've got to send things ahead so you can pick up on the trail and don't have to carry everything. Just go through with me what you really have to do to set up a trip like that.
Things have changed. So first you read about other people's experiences on the internet, and I bought a couple books of people that had gone through it. But even in the last 4 years, there's been internet marketplaces where you don't have to put your food together yourself and send it ahead to yourself. I use Amazon, and I just go shopping on Amazon and send whatever I'm buying to a town a week or two up ahead to general delivery, and I pick it up at the post office, which is a bit of a godsend. So my planning was figuring out what other people did and then figuring out what I didn't have to do anymore. So it was just downsizing, which is good. And it works physically with stuff in my pack, and it works planning wise with, like, this is what I have to do and see what I can get away with doing on the internet, online, like ordering food and also equipment as it wears out, i.e. shoes. So it's worked out well so far.
And how heavy was your pack when you started out?
I didn't get an exact weight, but just looking, I took a photo of it to send to my brother in Montreal. And now that I look at that picture, it looks ridiculous with things that, now that I know what the trail's like, it's so obvious I don't need. Like, I had a knee brace in there, which if I needed a knee brace, I wouldn't be able to be on the trail. Things like that, you know, that kind of motivated by a little bit of fear of the unknown. But once you start getting down to the nitty gritty of things, you realize that you just didn't need them. And like, it might sound a little bit disgusting, but I'm down to one change of clothes, and I just wear the same thing every day, which is great freedom. I don't have to choose anything. And same with a sleeping bag, tent. Like, everything that I have now is kind of the basics. And instead of packing for emergencies, you just pre-plan and avoid emergencies, which is probably one of the best things for keeping the weight down, is just avoid situations where you're going to need extra stuff. But don't be dumb about it. You know, if you need something warm, bring it warm, because it stinks being cold.
But especially with the different temperatures you'd be facing, because you know, you're going over all these passes where there's loads of snow, and then you get back to the valley and it's going to get warmer. I cannot imagine that one one set of clothes is enough. Wouldn't you have different layers just to adjust to different temperatures?
Yeah, lots of layers. Plus, there's another blessing of the arriving future is that there's so many different materials you can use and lightweight clothes. So I have a down jacket, which I wear almost every morning because it's so cold, and up on the passes. And I have a kind of lightweight wool sweater that goes underneath that, and then beneath that, it's kind of, they call it a base layer. I don't know what it really is. It's like a wicking layer that, second skin to me now. But I mean, all of them together are so light. It's not like, you know, the people trucking through the mountains years ago looking for gold, the prospectors with their leather and canvas 120 pound packs. Now you can have everything you need within 20 pounds, including the pack. So the pack, tent, sleeping bag, all your sleeping stuff, all your clothes, not the food. I overpack food all the time, so it tends to get a little crazy. But
and how many pairs of socks do you have?
Those are one of my, I don't know what you call them, things that you go overboard on, because I got two pairs of hiking socks full length, and then I have three pairs of ankle socks, so that I can wear the ankle socks underneath the hiking socks if I know I'm going up and getting cold. And then I can pretend that I change socks and just switch them out so that the other socks are on the bottom. It's a justification, I know, but oh well.
Does it work like that with underwear too? You just kind of turn it over?
It's crossed my mind, but it's more, the underwear is more like cycling shorts, which are another base layer, you know, a wicking layer, which I don't want to go against hygiene rules or anything, but they're surprisingly good after days and days of constant use. I don't know how to keep describing underwear and stay
right. When you came here, you've got like a special raincoat or something that helps you out when you wash. How does that usually go? Because you want to wash everything at once, right?
Yeah, that's a pain. It kind of falls through the cracks of planning, you know. One set of clothes every day, all day, is really lightweight, and especially if you get quality, then you don't have to replace it that often. But like here, where I'm wearing underpants and a rain jacket just for modesty's sake, and back in South Fork was the same way, except I was in a RV park in a common room where the showers and laundry were, so I had to wear my underpants and rain jacket around where these older couples were playing cards and cribbage and
but wait, these are the underpants we just talked about, right?
Yeah, we're back.
They're the ones that really do need to wash. No, I mean, you can keep wearing them when you're washing.
Well, there's also trail tricks of when you're crossing a river, maybe you like lunge a little low. But they're all excuses, and yes, they do need washing the most, so.
So are there, for example, this hostel, they have like, I mean, you didn't see that, but they have a change of clothes, especially for hikers. Is that something you've come across a few times?
Yeah, there's a lot of places that are embracing long distance hiking and understand that the hikers are keeping the weights down. So most places along the route have these hiker boxes where other hikers put stuff they don't want, and you can sort through it and kind of get a different kind of food. And there's also those spare clothes boxes. This is the third place. It's just it's always brought to my attention after, you know, so it's nice that they're here and other people benefit from them. And maybe if I stay here a few more days, I'll get myself a fine tie-dye shirt out of that box.
So what would be your advice if someone is pondering whether to do something like that?
If somebody were planning on hiking, I'm not sure the other ones, but I know the Continental Divide here, you'd need outdoor experience at least. You'd need to be familiar with being in places you don't want to be. And I don't mean like scary places, but I mean wet and cold, and knowing that it's temporary and just kind of plow through it, and you're not going to be wet and cold forever. Or if you're in some windy, cold, I don't know, some place that eventually you're just going to walk out of it and it'll all be good again, and you'll be in some sunshine and happy places again. And also that if once you decide to do it, you have to prioritize it over everything else, because for the 6 months prior to me coming out here, all these things came up that were trying to kind of divert my attention or cancel the trip or delay the trip or something. And you just have to say, nope, the trip's first. Like, I don't mean to say be cruel to other people or something in your life that really needs to be done, but there's going to be tons of things like, I don't know, getting your car fixed, but they can't have the appointment till the day after your flight leaves, you know, just silly little things. And you just have to kind of stand up and say, nope, if it's not fixed by now, then I'll get it fixed in October, you know, something like that. So get ready. The mantra for the Continental Divide is embrace the brutality. And I'm starting to understand what they mean, because say 8 hours a day, you're in your tent, nice and warm. 8 hours a day, you're somewhere fun, and maybe 8 hours a day, you're somewhere where you're trying to get out of, like, hip deep in a snowbank, or thunderstorms chasing you around, or somewhere, but it all passes, and it's a fun story to tell.
It sounds incredibly tough, but you must be quite into it by now, because you are thinking of doing another trail once you finish this one, right?
That's correct. It's, the Continental Divide Trail ends at the Canadian border, but right across the border, the Great Divide Trail goes up into Canada, and it's less official and not finished, and it only goes about another 1,600 miles. But along the Great Divide Trail, there's a mountain that my parents used to bring us out to every summer. They were both teachers, so they had the summers off, and they'd stick us all in a van or a station wagon, big old ugly thing, and bring us out to the mountains for a month. So there's a mountain along the Great Divide called Mount Assiniboine, which is kind of a more symbolic end for me than just the Canadian border would be. So if I think about the Canadian border, it's like, yay, I'm getting close. But if I think of Mount Assiniboine, I'm like, I can't wait to get there and see it again. So even in the crappy times, that's what I think about, is getting back there and going back. There's a neat little waterfall that comes off one of the adjacent mountains into a pool, and there's always these little trout in the pool, and I can always catch them. So that's where I'm going, to catch those little trouts.
So you've got fishing gear with you?
Yeah, I got a pack rod in Colorado and a Colorado fishing license, and altogether cost me $113, and so far I've caught one 8-inch fish, so that fish is now 100 and some odd. It was an expensive fish, but I caught it on my birthday and I ate it, so it was also a birthday present. It was pretty good.
And how, if you get to that mountain, how long will that make your trip in total?
The Canadian part's in kilometers, kilometers, so it's 5,000 odd up the Continental Divide, and then another 750, so it'd be 5,750 plus 10 into the park. 5,760 kilometers.
Wow. And what's the time again that you have for the whole thing?
Originally, I planned between 4 and 6 months, 4 and 5 actually, but I'm going faster than I thought. So I think the American portion, the Continental Divide Trail, will take me just over 3 months. And then the last jaunt into Mount Assiniboine is only about 3 weeks, maybe a month. I'll stick around and fish for the extra week. So all told, I think I'll be done and headed home probably mid to late September.
Could you just to finish up, could you give me a list of the most essential things that you carry?
Everything I'm carrying right now is most essential, but my favorites are my trail hiking shoes. They're Saucony ISO trail runners, and they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. But also, my tent is a Nemo, one person. And I don't know how they do it, but it's less than 2 pounds. It packs away to nothing. But when I put it up and jump in it, everything's brighter. No, I'm just kidding. but I mean, it's probably like a 5 or 10 degree, well, maybe not 10, 5 degree Celsius temperature difference, and you're at, like, it blocks the wind. And my sleeping bag is also a Nemo Salsa. And I used to, in New Mexico, they call it cowboy camping when you don't even put up your tent. And I didn't need to. There's some kind of windproofing around it, and it's just, it's good to 9 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's lived up to every expectation so far. So my tent, my sleeping bag, and my shoes are probably my favorite. And my backpack's an Osprey, which is held up through bushwhacking, everything, just abuse.
And in terms of cooking gear and those things?
I don't bring cooking gear. I just mainly snack. And it started out... I heard, or in my research before I left, you know, they say you burn so many calories that it doesn't matter what you eat. You just find the highest calorie food and you shovel it in your face and keep going. So it was a bit liberating at first because it's exactly the opposite of, you know, the nutritionist guides. So there was me and 10 pounds of chocolate bars, but you get sick of the chocolate bars, and potato chips are maybe not surprisingly high in calories and lightweight. So I went through a phase of eating a lot of Pringles, but you get to a point where you want better balance. So now, like, I have a few granola bars, I have some Clif bars, I like bringing out a big block of cheese and crackers. Everything still has to be really calorie dense, but surviving for 3 weeks on end on Snickers bars got a bit old.
And drink wise, you just have water, or do you have like a water purifying tablets or a filter or something you carry?
I just have water bottles. In Colorado, I just have one because it's kind of spring melt and there's water everywhere. In New Mexico, I had 6 just because of the desert conditions. And New Mexico is a good place to start because the only water sources are cattle water sources also. So you're digging water out of some sketchy places. And even the tanks, I don't know how it is, but they always have dead birds floating in them. So you get used to drinking water out of pretty non-typical things that you wouldn't normally drink out of. And I just have plastic water bottles, but I also bring these purification tablets. So you put one in, wait half an hour, and they say that it's good to go. And so far, so good for me, too. I haven't got sick. And I don't know how, because some of those dead crow cow poo water, you know, it's just pretty disgusting.
Okay, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you can think of that, I don't know, would be important to mention?
No, the only thing is at the beginning, so I guess yes. But at the beginning of the trip, before I came out here, I'd made plans with family, like aunts and uncles and my brother and my sister, to meet up somewhere on the trail. And it's just a bad idea because you never know how the pace you're going to be on. They are always far away and they need to pre-plan and buy airplane tickets and everything, and it's just not going to match up. So it kind of goes along with the theme of prioritizing your trip over most other things. It's your own trip, you got to hike it on your own. And if by chance you meet up with people that you can hike with, then it's great, but trying to make plans is folly. It's just not going to work. And that's all. Otherwise, it's great. Everything's great.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.